Learning is nidhidhasana. You have to apply it. You have to make it a way of asking yourself, like, how do I change my life from this? What is the implication of this purport in my life, in terms of how I lead my life? And then the fourth stage in Vedic learning is vandana. That you go to the Lord and you say, I've learned all of these things, now I pray that all of these things may go from here to here. So because for most people, reading of Srila Prabhupada's books doesn't go beyond Shravana, there's no emphasis on Manana, Vidhyasana, Vandana. Therefore, because you're only taking it as information, then naturally it will become boring. You may feel it to be not so stimulating. So you have to, it's like a cook in the Mana kitchen, I'm sure in our temple in London, and I'm sure it's here as well, like there's a recipe book there. I mean, that recipe book must have been there for like 35 years. And devotees still refer to that recipe book. How can you read the same recipe book for 35 years? Because if you just read a recipe book, it gets boring. But if you take a recipe book and then you actually start following it and using it in the kitchen, it gets very interesting because you can actually cook things that taste really nice. And therefore people will refer to a recipe book even after 35 years because they're using it and it works. So if you read Srila Prabhupada's books and you do mananam, nididhyasanam, vandanam and you actually bring that knowledge into your life, you'll realize, oh my God, this actually works. And then you'll feel, I need to read it again. I need to read it more. So it's really about going beyond an intellectual engagement with Srila Prabhupada's books and reading it in a deeper way. Yeah.
Prabhuji, there's one question. I think you already explained about it. But again, I want to ask you that some people ask, atheist people, how do you know God exists?
So you want me to answer that?
How to answer that? How to answer that for these people? I know they will not accept somehow, but still.
The thing is, when someone asks you how do you know God exists, the first question you have to ask them is, what will be proof for you? So let me ask you that question. You want to know God exists, right? So what do you constitute as proof of God? That you see God? Is that your proof?
I don't see, but I feel...
What would be proof? If you want me to prove God exists to you, what would be acceptable proof for you? That's the first question you have to ask. Because I could say so many things, but that may not constitute proof for you. So what proof do you want? What proof do you want?
I want undeniable logic and reason.
Undeniable logic and reason that yes. God exists.
Yes.
Okay, so undeniable logic and reason is that everything you see around you is designed. This painting, did it come about by chance? Where did it come from?
It came obviously from a creative source who had a specific idea in mind.
So there you go. So is that not logical? Is that not undeniable logic?
Yes.
So there's so much logic. So if you want logic, we can give you logic. What else do you want? What other proof do you want? If someone says, well, I need to see God. Okay, but then there's so many things you believe in your life that you haven't seen. So why do you believe in those things? Then by that logic, there's so many things in your life that you also can't believe. So if you're saying, I'll only believe in God if I see Him, then my answer to you is, if that's what constitutes proof for you that something exists, then there's a whole bunch of things you can't be doing in your life. Are you ready to give it up? Well, people are irrational. They ascribe a certain level of skepticism towards God that they don't direct towards other things in their life that they have as much or even more faith in. The same person who's saying, prove to me God exists, what about to them if you said, prove to me that the Big Bang was true? what would they be able to tell you?
Theory.
Theory?
Yeah.
So we can also give you theory. What more can you give us? You see, so there's in the world today, there's an irrational skepticism that people ascribe on God that they don't ascribe to other things that they also believe in. So this was Srila Prabhupada's argument. He was saying that we're not asking you for blind faith in God. But what people are doing is they're putting blind doubt in God. And blind faith, blind doubt is just as dangerous as blind faith. So we're Prabhupada said you can experience God, but then you have to do the experiment. Just like, okay, if you say to me, prove God exists. So then I say, okay, here's the experiment. Do it for yourself, then you'll find out. No, no, I want the proof before I do the experiment. So where in the scientific world can someone say you get the proof before the experiment? It's a simple point. Now if someone says, yeah, okay, I'll do the experiment, but I want to do the experiment in my way. No. Say, for example, you say, I wanna verify that it's 23 degrees in this room right now. Right? I say, yeah, you can verify it. Here's a set of weighing scales. Now prove it. You'll say that's a scientific instrument, but it's the wrong instrument. It's the wrong instrument to measure temperature. So if a scientist says, I want to prove God by my experiment, we tell them you're using the wrong instrument. We'll give you the experiment, we'll give you the methodology, we'll give you the tools. Here's your japa mala. No, I want to do it with a microscope. No, that's a silly, saying, I want to measure temperature with a set of weighing scales. That's not good logic. So you see, actually the logic is not good. I don't know, was that fair? Someone can debate me if they want.
I don't know if it's kind of proof, but also another argument people come with is if this was true, then other like scientists or other people, other prominent people would have verified it, and who, like other people who I have faith in would have verified it.
Would have verified that God exists.
Yeah.
But how many of them are doing the experiment? How many scientists are trying 16 rounds? how they will verify? You're saying they will verify other scientists, but what are they using to verify? The very fact that they can't verify means that they're using the wrong instrument. You're not going to see God through a telescope. Just like you're not going to measure temperature through a set of weighing scales, because it's the wrong instrument. If you want to perceive spiritual phenomena, you have to use spiritual methodology, higher dimensional methodology. Simple logic. Therefore, Krishna says, Raja Vidya Raja Guyam Pavitram Idamutamam Pratyaksha Avagamam Dharmyam Susukam Kartumavyayam. Krishna says this is the king of all knowledge, it's the perfection of religion. Pratyaksha Avagamam Dharmyam, because it gives direct perception of the self by realization. Pratyaksha means you directly perceive. Krishna is saying you'll directly perceive the spiritual reality. Srila Prabhupada was not presenting a religion, he was presenting a spiritual science. Krishna consciousness is not meant to make you believe in God. That's just like ABC stuff. That's primary school stuff, to believe in God. Krishna consciousness is meant to equip you to perceive the existence of God at every step in your life. By realization. But you have to do the experiment. So, Yeah, so Srila Prabhupada said Krishna consciousness is not a religion, it's not a faith. Because if you do the experiment, it doesn't matter what faith you are, what culture you are, where you come from, you will experience it. Yes.
I continue on the same line of the question of God. No, the last Sunday in your lesson, you in some moments said that this planet is so miserly, so polluted, and I see that the planet is total chaos. It's too much. It's not unbalanced. How we live, you know, all human beings, humans, how we live. And this is in somehow, it's so much poor people, and you know, it's too much extreme accumulation of the body, and that doesn't have feelings today, doesn't care about anybody. And so I question, okay, if you got this on create this universe, and also this planet, and his power, have all power to do everything, and nothing is moving without him. Why
does he let
God
it happen?
Is tolerate that there is too much war, is too much poverty in the world, is too much people some dying, and why is don't he us something on the chains? The devil of the humans are living in peace.
So let me just repeat your question. You're saying there's so much imbalance, so many problems in the world, and why doesn't God basically sort it out? Yeah, the world is not in a good situation. Here's a statistic that should worry you. 2% of people in the world own 98% of the wealth in the world. 2% own 98% of wealth in the world. Yes. Think about the implications of that. Anyway, we'll talk about that later. Yes, there is so much problem in the world. Corruption, environmental problems, all of these things. Why does Krishna allow it to happen? In the Ishopanishad, it's mentioned, Om Purna Madapurna Midam Purna Purna Udachyate Purnasya Purna Madaya Purna Meva Vishishyate. Krishna is complete. And everything emanating from him, including this world, is also complete and perfect. Purna means perfect. So, how is this world perfect? There's so many problems. But what is the purpose of the world? What is the purpose of this world? Is it to live here happily? The purpose of this world is to get the hell out. So Krishna, by his infinite mercy, creates a situation in the material world. Krishna is such a genius. He allows people to exercise their free will in deviant ways. He allows other people to be on the receiving end of suffering so that they experience certain reactions. And he basically orchestrates and allows everything in this world to go on because it's perfect and complete for its purpose, which is to help the living entity realize, I'm not meant to be here. It's a jail. This is a jail. And in a jail, there's many different types of cells. And each cell gives you a certain experience, which helps you to realize, you know what, I can't be here, I need to find out where I really need to be. So Krishna allows all of these things to go on, but what Krishna simultaneously does is he provides the way to get out, the way to find immunity, the way that you can be surrounded by all of this terrible stuff and still remain untouched by it, by elevating your consciousness. What the Bhagavatam actually says, we normally think of Kali Yuga as like, isn't it? Sometimes devotees get into Kali Yuga Katha. Prabhu, Kali Yuga, Kali Yuga, I mean it's so bad. Kali Yuga, Kali Yuga. You know what the Bhagavatam says? Kalim Sabha Jayanti Arya Guna Gya Sada Bhagina Yatra Sankirtane Neva Sarvasvartho Vilabhyate. The Bhagavatam says, Kalim Sabha Jayanti Arya. Kali Yuga is worshipped. Kali Yuga is worshipped. Bhagavatam says, Kalim Sabha Jayanti Arya. Kali Yuga is worshipped by who? Guna Gya Sada Bhagina. By those amazing personalities who know the essence of life. They know the essence of life, that the essence of life is to get out. And what happens in Kali Yuga? Yatra sankirtane neva sarva svartho bilabhyate. That simply by doing the chanting of Krishna's names, you can elevate yourself beyond all of these problems. So once there was a devotee and he was, you know, he was saying, oh no, it's Kali Yuga, it's so bad, Kali Yuga. And then the Swami looked at him and he said, it's not Kali Yuga. This is not Kali, this is Chaitanya Yuga. It's Chaitanya Yuga, it's not Kali Yuga. And that means, it's actually in the midst of all the terrible stuff, it's amazing. Asti hiyako mahanguna, one great quality. Kirtana deva krishnasya, just chant Krishna's names. Mukta sangha param rajet, and you become free from all of this. So the world is perfect and complete for its purpose.
So I thank him personally, Bhante. When I see everything, and the conclusion is that the human beings, so we are now, we can live and see the precious or the values of Krishna give to us. So, personally, I think if I am lucky, I have this opportunity to begin in the line to move. But if you all human beings have, we have, all human beings have the opportunity to get the same, but okay, somehow ignorance is not very good. But my conclusion is, as I think it stays maybe millions years more to the evolution of the human, to live in, or to go in the Krishna conscience, to get the perfect evolution.
Of course, it's mentioned that after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu comes, for 10,000 years, there is a golden age, even within Kali Yuga. And in that time, there is a great opportunity for all the living entities to go to Krishna. And we're only 500 years into that. So there is a great opportunity. And as devotees, you see, we are trying to make the world a better place. It's not that we're just going out and telling everyone, just chant Hare Krishna. We are doing that. And we're also trying to make the world a better place. We're trying to teach people how to live in the mode of goodness, how to teach people to live in community, have proper relationships with each other. We're trying to teach divine qualities and all of these things. But ultimately, we're trying to teach people how to chant Hare Krishna, because that's going to be the ultimate solution, right? So it is a difficult time, and we try to do the best we can to make it better. But ultimately, we have to help people to get out.
Another question, Prabhuji. Sometime I think that practicing yoga, practicing bhakti yoga, karma yoga, jnana yoga, sometimes we are so motivated to do. But someday we feel like lazy, someday we feel like we are not motivated. What do you think about that? And if we are not motivated, how could you motivate yourself to practice, to continue your routine, your daily sadhana?
Of course, many things are there, but probably the most important thing is association of devotees. Yeah. You grew up in India, maybe you went to Bombay. You know what Bombay trains are like, huh? You haven't been to Bombay trains? I mean, you know, Danish subway is amazing, right? India trains means, you know, it's like packed, completely packed. Yeah, people are like hanging out of the doors and it's like chaos, you know. So if you're in a Mumbai train and you're coming to the stop where you need to get off and you're stuck in the middle of the carriage, I mean, how do you get out? It's completely packed. But what you do is that you just somehow or other you wiggle your way into like just into the right spot, and then when it comes to the door, when it comes to the station, everyone starts moving. And you know what? You don't need to walk. They'll just carry you off. Right? You just go with the crowd. Right? So it's kind of like that. Spiritual life is like that. You somehow or other you have to just find a life in which you're surrounded by devotees. Because when we're lacking in faith, when we're lacking in enthusiasm, when we're lacking in vision, when we're lacking in devotion, then we are borrowing from the Vaishnavas and they're carrying us. So it's like, you know, sometimes we say devotees can't live with them, can't live without them. It's also difficult sometimes to live with devotees as well, isn't it? Like, tolerate. It's not so easy. Sometimes we're in the association of devotees and we think, oh, I've had enough with it. I'll do it alone, you know. I'll get my room somewhere in Vrindavan by myself, you know, me and Krishna, I'll do it. It'll be very difficult. So there are many things you can do to keep your motivation up, but I think primarily it's good association. Just like you're staying here now, so you feel the motivation. Now tomorrow you will go, you will not feel that energy. You will have to draw it from yourself. Then someone may say, what about grihasthas? They're not living in the temple, they're not living in community. So that's why those who are grihasthas, they have to ensure that regularly they come into the sangha. You know, nowadays even grihasthas sometimes do Skype chanting. Have you heard of it? Skype chanting. So they log on every day together at 4 o'clock in the morning, 5 o'clock in the morning to motivate each other. And then, you know, there they are in front of a computer screen. Hare Krishna. It's amazing, huh? So they make some arrangement. Sadhu Sangha, Sadhu Sangha, Sarva Shastri Koi, Lava Matra Sadhu Sangha, Sarva Siddhi Hoi. Without the association of sadhus, you will not do it. Yeah.
Just this last point that you mentioned about the importance of devotee association and how grihasthas, they are sometimes a little bit troubled because they don't have that. We as brahmacharis, we may take it a little bit for granted because we're so like caught up in association. And so we have no idea what it would mean to be without it. So I personally think that for many grihasthas, like one of the reasons that they're struggling is that they're trying to apply Vedic philosophy but with contemporary culture. Mm-hmm. And for example, if you would look at like household life in Vedic times, that would be very, very, very different. Mm-hmm. Because there is no concept of a nuclear family in Vedic culture. This, for example, you mentioned Skype chanting. Well, for example, if a couple, they are to live together with, for example, with their parents, which would be completely normal. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not unusual to have a household of like 12, 15 members, more than that. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So then you also like, in that sense, then you have a lot of association. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a really good point. Is that Varnashram that you're talking about, it's about creating that, you see. This is the challenge now moving forward, you know, it's like you're creating a gurukul. That's a really good start. Because, you know, parents will go anywhere to get a good education for their children, isn't it? Like parents go like across the world to try and get a good education. Then what happened in London is that they built the Avanti schools, okay? So then immediately all the children are together. So, and then there's a temple room, and so the children are getting good association. But to get into the Avanti school, all the parents have to live within a certain catchment area. So now all the parents, devotees, are living in the same area. The kids go to school. The parents see each other every day. So there's a whole community there now. And then what's even better is that the school creates so many job opportunities. So then the parents of the children who are going to that school can also work in the school. So then you can work with devotees. So do you see how then you're creating a Varnashram situation in which although you're living in the world, it's almost like you create an ecosystem where you're surrounded by devotees. Mm. And that's the beauty of these kind of projects. Mm. And so that's really the way forward, you know. If for 40, 50 hours a week you're working for a corporate shark, you know, and engaging in that environment, of course it's going to have an effect. But the moment you create a Varnashram situation like that, it's a whole different world.
Sorry, I didn't understand corporate shark.
It just means like a materialistic boss and a materialistic job. Corporate sharks. You know what a shark is, right? They'll eat you up. Jaws. Yeah.
So if we are here as a like kind of sentence, like it's a prison. How can the key to get out of the prison be to love the prison guard? It kind of seems like that sometimes. It kind of seems like Krishna really loves us, but he punishes us by putting us in.
Well, the prison guard is Durga Devi. Today is Durga Puja, by the way. So you have to honor the prison guard. You have to honor the prison guard. Krishna is. See, there's different analogies that are used, metaphors that are used for the world. Sometimes the world is said to be a prison. Sometimes the world is said to be a hospital. Sometimes the world is said to be a school or a university. So when we say it's a prison, it's one part of the learning. One part, the learning that you get in a prison, or the thing that comes from a prison, is you get a certain amount of suffering, right? The thing that you get in a school is you get educational lessons. The thing that you get in a hospital is medicine. So the material world is all of these things. You get a bit of suffering, you get a bit of lessons, you get a bit of medicine, and all of these things together help you to get out. So it's not just that, okay, the whole world is just like a prison, and it's just like, okay, that is true, but that's one perspective of it. And ultimately, what is this prison? It's just a temporary arrangement by Krishna. So.
Yesterday, Prabhu, we talked about Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, and Bhakti Yoga, in between Bhakti Yoga and love. So we have Kriya Yoga, Jnana Yoga, right, in Bhagavad Gita. Where does it fit in this context?
Yeah, so the main four yoga systems given in the Gita are karma, jnana, ashtanga and bhakti. Right, so if you, one day we can do a seminar on the yoga ladder and see how all of these connect. But basically, dhyana yoga is the seventh step of ashtanga yoga. Yam, niyam, asana, pranayam, pratyahara, dharana, dhyan, samadhi. Okay, so dhyana yoga means the seventh step of Ashtanga Yoga, so that comes under that one. Hatha Yoga, what people do in the world today, asana, pranayama, this is basically Hatha Yoga, that's steps 3 and 4 of Ashtanga Yoga. So Hatha Yoga comes under Ashtanga Yoga. Kriya Yoga, Kundalini, Raja Yoga, Vivekananda, he familiarized Raja Yoga, these all come under Ashtanga Yoga. And then all this other stuff like hot yoga and all of that. Forget about that. That's all for money, you know? Yeah. So basically everything will fall under these four.
And second one was Mahamantra, which we had, right? What was the origin? It is called Mahamantra. So when it was consecrated originally, how it was then conveyed further?
Mahamantra is eternal, and although it was popularized by Mahaprabhu in the 15th century, you know, 16th century, like that, you find even the Mahamantra in the Upanishads. For example, this very famous verse that we sing. Iti sho dashakam nam nam kalikal mashamashanam nata parataro paya sarva vedeshu drishyate. This is a discussion between Brahma and Narad. It's a Brahma, the beginning of the universe. And what is being said in that conversation? Iti sho dashakam nam nam, these 16 words, kalikal mashamashanam, they can destroy all the effects of Kali Yuga. Nata parataro payat, you will not find a more superior process. Sarva vedeshu drishyate, if you read all of the Vedas, you will not find. So the Mahamantra is there, is going on. Even before Kali Yuga, the Mahamantra is being chanted. It's going on, it's eternal. But it becomes popularized by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Kali Yuga as the Yuga Dharma. It's not practiced as the Yuga Dharma in other Yugas. In other Yugas, there's different processes to elevate oneself. Kriteya dhyayato Vishnu, Kretayam yajato mukhe, Dvapare paricharyayam kalotad harikirtanad. Satya Yuga is dhyan, meditation. Treta Yuga is yajna, sacrifice. Dvapari Yuga, archana. Diti Vaishya and Kalil Tadhari Ketana, chanting. So it's there, but it's not put in the front. Like. Anyone else? Any of the ladies? Any questions?
I was often wondering about these five factors of action, like the endeavor and the super soul, the place,
the performer,
yeah, the performance, the endeavor. Like this. So about the place, you know, like the outcome of your actions, like in Lord Chaitanya, he would leave Jagannath Puri, and he was going to South India, and he was preaching in South India, and he got very good response there. So when we make an endeavor, yeah. So how is it our duty to find the right place for us to be most effective?
How is it our duty? So means. Yes, the endeavor, the chaste, is what is in our control in terms of the effort we put into any activity. And then we try to make the place a favorable place. We try to create a favorable association. All of those things, as far as possible, whatever we can do. So, you see, bhakti is ahaituki apratihata. Apratihata means it's uninterrupted. So if your endeavor is 100%, even if you're not able to control all the other factors, it will not be checked. You see? So, with your best effort and your best intelligence, you try to create a favorable situation around yourself so that you can endeavor in bhakti as far as possible. After that, you have to accept that whatever place is given, whatever Krishna ultimately leaves me with, this is the place. This is the place that Krishna has ordained for me. And then you just do your
effort. What if you are invited like different places? You know, like...
So then you have, you know, you have other advisors in your spiritual life, and then ultimately, after reference to other advisors and things, you make a decision, and then you accept it. Yeah.
Just two thoughts in this regard. I heard that if you're consulting six brahmanas or six devotees, that's said to be as good as consulting God Himself. Mm. So you can like.
A little louder.
If you ask six independent devotees, like Brahmanas, then that is as good as asking Krishna personally. And another thing is that there's actually such a thing like astrology is a great science in many ways. And you can also, just as for example, some devotees, they're doing like marriage compatibility and things like that. An astrologer can actually designate where will be the optimal places for you to live, and like where in the world will you have like favorable winds in your sails, because there's different planetary influences. Mm-hmm. So of course, like Prabhupada, he says that like we can be transcendental to our karma, but he mentioned that happens at the stage of bhava. Mm-hmm. So like we are influenced by the planet, so this is like just one consideration.
Yeah, and ultimately find a place where you have favorable association, because that is what we talked about as one of the main driving forces behind one's bhakti. Where you have community relationships and devotees who you can develop with, that will be ultimately.
Because it seems like, you know, devotional service is so nice, and practically wherever you are, you know, you quickly get acquainted and you develop friendship and you get good association by Krishna's grace. So, but yeah, I just find it a little difficult. Like, I was invited to Govardhan Eco Village to take part in a lady empowerment project, to cook for 2,500 like village ladies, to give them facilities to get a better economical situation, and that is like made by women, you know, in a safe environment for with other women, and so it's just like seemed very inspiring. But I
yeah, there are many factors, no, because you also try to pick a place based on service as well, isn't it? A place where you're going to make a difference.
Yes.
You know, like we want to make a contribution to the movement, we want to make a contribution to Srila Prabhupada. So some places may be better for your sadhana, some places may be better for your service and contribution. Mm. So somehow you have to balance all of these things and try to find a place where all things can be achieved.
Is that why you travel?
Well, I mean, I was in the same temple for 20 years, and I'm traveling now because that's a new service for me. I was practically in the same temple for 20 years. Although I traveled, but that was my place, my base. For some people it's traveling, for other people... Jeb Thakur Maharaj was in the Guinness Book of Records, you know that? In 1 year, he took 170 flights.
Wasn't it 370?
No, 170. No. And he it averaged out to one flight every 2.5 days.
Okay. I heard an exaggerated story of that. That he was
370. Yeah. That would be a lot. That would be more than one a day. That would be possible.
Yeah, exactly.
Not possible. No, 170.
You might translate.
170. And once, because he wanted to get a cheap flight somewhere, like it was like a 4-hour flight, but he wanted to get a cheap flight, so he went on a whole detour and it took 48 hours. He got it for a quarter of the price. Anyway, what to do? Everyone has a different life, no? But you just find the place. I'm just looking at time. It's 8:10. I don't want to keep everyone.
Tomorrow's another day.
Hopefully it's another day for us. Thank you so much. Thank you.